Going to turn the meeting over to Jake Kreitzer, who is the pro tem chair of the SSC. Thank you, Jake.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a fairly short presentation. Dr. Weinberg did an excellent job of covering a lot of the nuts and bolts of the assessment, so I'm not going to repeat much of what he said. I have the controller here. Whoops. I'm going to get right into this. We at our meeting last Wednesday, set ABCs and OFLs for three stocks, Georges Bank Cod, Gulf of Maine Cod, and Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Winter Flounder. This first slide is a series of just sort of some of the key issues we considered in determining our recommendation for Georges Bank Cod. The first one is actually a consistent problem among all three of the stocks we addressed and more, which is that in recent times we've seen that projections from stock assessments tend to overestimate biomass when compared with later assessments covering the years of the projection. That's been a fairly persistent problem lately, and it's something the Science Center, the PDT, and the SSC have spent a fair bit of time in the last couple of years trying to understand and respond to. So that issue influenced a lot of our decision. We also consider the fact that the actual catch for this stock has been well below the ABC for the last three-year period. We had some discussion about shifting distribution of Georges Bank Cod, particularly movements generally toward the north and east, and how that might affect availability and perhaps productivity. The last two points were ones that Jim highlighted, which is, first of all, that the current estimate of spawning stock biomass for the stock is pretty close to the origin of the stock recruitment relationship, and that's a place you don't want to be, because you can start to run into various ecological problems such as predator traps and other phenomena that make it difficult to get out of that space. And then finally, the severe age truncation of the stock over the last couple decades. Jim put the same plot up, so I won't spend a lot of time on it, but this is the spawning stock biomass against recruitment estimates for the stock going back, I think, to 1982. I think it goes back to the 70s, actually. Anyway, the current estimate is somewhere around here, 13,000 metric tons, so it's right at the lower end of the range of observations we've seen in the time period covered by the assessment. This is one of the catch at age plots. I think this is U.S. commercial catch. And this is just illustrating that age truncation. So you can see in earlier years, you had fair numbers of fish in sort of the 5, 6, 7, up to 10-year-old age classes, that those oldest fish have all but disappeared in more recent catch. And even in the sort of intermediate age classes, the numbers are less than we've seen. This is a concern, because while the assessment models don't treat older fish differently in terms of estimating productivity, there's a fair bit of research out there that shows that older and larger fish produce more eggs per unit of body weight, spawn more frequently, and produce higher quality offspring as well. So part of the problems we've been seeing in slower rebuilding than we'd like may be the absence of those fish, and that was a key point of concern. So to get to our ABC recommendation, the PDT recommended and the SSC endorsed a constant catch option, and the rationale for that was that first bullet on the first slide about the divergence in projected biomass and estimated biomass by later assessments that we see gets worse the further into the future you project. So the idea here was that we'd set the 2013 ABC using 75% of the FMSY proxy. That's basically our default control rule. But then we'd retain that value even as the projection suggests biomass will increase, because we don't have a lot of confidence in that projection much further out than 1 or even 2 years. So this was a way of trying to address that persistent problem of increasingly poor performance of the projections further into the future. And I believe you wanted me to go through all three, Rip, and then thank you. Okay. So on to the next stop, Gulf of Mankod. As Dr. Weinberg described, the assessment considered two plausible scenarios in two different models. One, the base model, which assumed that natural mortality rate was consistent over the time period modeled in the assessment, and that assumption is consistent with sort of the inherent life history traits of cod. There's been a considerable amount of research done on a number of fish species to look at relationships among growth, longevity, mortality, maturity, and when you look at the rest of the cod life history, it points you toward a natural mortality rate of about 0.2. However, there's been some tagging studies that Dr. Weinberg alluded to that suggest that mortality may have gone up in recent times, and therefore the assessment also moved forward the so-called MRAMP model, in which mortality begins at a level of 0.2, but increases to a value of 0.4 and remains there through the end of the time series. The SSC actually was welcomed having these two models before us. It's something that's come up in our meetings before, is that there's value in considering multiple models that have kind of comparable plausibility and performance, because it gives you a broader understanding of stock dynamics and particularly of uncertainty in stock dynamics. So this was a welcome change, but it also introduced some complications. One was this question of whether the change in natural mortality estimated in the MRAMP model would persist through time, whether we've moved into some new environmental state that's going to mean higher mortality for cod going forward, or whether it's more ephemeral and we'll come back to the longer-term value of 0.2 as assumed in the other model. Another issue was that while these two models did converge at common values of spawning stock biomass, fishing mortality, and recruitment in the terminal year of the assessment, when you project forward, they go off in different directions. And so that has implications for setting catch advice. And then a related issue is, what is the appropriate F value to apply to those projected biomass estimates when determining catch advice, and whether you need to use alternative reference points depending upon which model you're working with. So these are issues that were raised and not resolved. First of all, that wasn't our task, and second of all, we didn't have time. But we highlight these as issues that we need to confront if we're going to continue to consider multiple models in determining stock status and setting catch advice. Dr. Weinberg put up the same plot. This just shows the biomass trend estimated from both the base model, which are the filled circles, and the MRAMP model, where mortality increases, and just illustrating that they do get to a very similar estimate of biomass in the final year. I couldn't find a plot in the assessment report of the projections, so I put up this table from the PDT report and just highlighted the biomass estimates from the projections and how they differ between the two models, to show that while they reached a common endpoint, when you move forward, the MRAMP model assumes that biomass is going to be, on average, two-thirds that estimated by the base case model, where M remains at 0.2. I think that's basically because when you have a higher mortality, more fish are dying, you're not getting as much stock growth from individual fish growth. In other words, the trade-off between growth and mortality is weighted more toward mortality. So when looking at the MRAMP model and projecting forward, we assume that the trajectory is not as steep, and therefore the resulting values are not as great. But these differences have implications for setting catch advice. So the PDT provided, and the SSC subsequently endorsed, two different constant catch options. And again, we went with a constant catch approach because it increases the buffer between the ABC and the OFL the further into the future you get. And the rationale for that is our lack of confidence, or lower confidence at least, in the projected biomass the further into the future we get. So of these two options, the SSC preferred the one that was recommended by the PDT, which applies 75% of the FMSY proxy to the biomass projected for 2013, and then retains that value for the next 2 years. And the actual OFL and ABC values are up there. The ABC would be 1249 metric tons, and the OFL changes with each year. The alternative that the PDT considered and the SSC decided was worth moving forward as well, as an alternative, is based on F declining from a value of 0.27 in 2013 down to the FMSY proxy in 2015 and applying that to the biomass projected from the MRAMP model. That gives you an ABC of 1550 metric tons. And that outcome actually results in, I have to check on that, I think that actually results in overfishing according to the MRAMP model, but not the base model. So because this option was a fairly risk-averse one according to the base model and was sort of right on the bounds of risk tolerance for the MRAMP model, we decided it was worth moving forward as well, even though we recommend the alternative. And we did note that either of these options obviously represents substantial reduction in catch and therefore would give a higher likelihood of rebuilding than we've seen in the stock in recent years. And then the final stock we looked at was Southern New England Mid-Atlantic Winter Flounder. There was not a new assessment for the stock like the other two, but the reasons we are considering it, there have been some encouraging signs for this stock that has been troubled in recent years. F is now well below FMSY in the most recent assessment. It's about 18% of that value, so we've done a good job of reining in fishing mortality. And the survey data, at least at the very end of the series, shows some indications of an uptick. I've put up here the plot of the fall survey data, which show higher values in, I think that's the late 90s and early 2000s, some fairly low values over the last decade, but then this uptick that gave us some hope that perhaps the reductions in F are leading to recovery of this stock. And the same pattern was evident, not quite as strong, I don't think, in the spring survey as well. However, there was a concern raised, and I believe this was raised during the last benchmark, and the PDT has subsequently done more work with this issue in developing catch advice, which has to do with the recruitment patterns. So this stock does use a stock recruitment model. This graph I've pulled from the PDT report shows the red line running through the middle of the plot is the recruitment predicted by that model in each year of the assessment. The x-axis, it's labeled observations, but those are actually years going from, I want to say, 2010 back to the start of the assessment. So based on the biomass in each year, the red line shows what the recruitment would be as predicted by that model. But the blue dots show the actual recruitment, or at least the estimated recruitment from the assessment. And what we would expect is these blue points to be scattered pretty evenly on either side of this red line, that the actual recruitment is, of course, going to differ from the predicted recruitment to some degree due to a variety of largely unknown environmental factors, but that the spread of points should be about even on either side of the line. Instead, what we see here is from about 1999 to 2010, actual recruitment is consistently lower than predicted recruitment. So this raises questions similar to those we've considered for Gulf of Maine cod with respect to mortality, about whether we've seen some sort of a shift. Now, the question is whether this suggests we've moved to some new ecosystem state, perhaps a persistent regime shift, or whether this is a more ephemeral pattern, some kind of environmental cycle, and whether those residuals would shift to the other side of the line going forward. So this was a key uncertainty, but based on the possibility, perhaps the likelihood that this pattern would persist, the PDT recommended and the SSC endorsed a constant catch option. Again, that decision was made to reduce the risk of poor projections further into the future and increase the buffer between the OFL and the ABC. And what the PDT did was determine the long-term yield for the stock if fishing consistently at 75% of FMSY, if that level of fishing mortality is maintained indefinitely, but recruitment patterns persist as they have been over the last decade. So under that set of circumstances, the long-term yield would be 1,676 metric tons, and that was therefore chosen as the near-term ABC for the next 3 years with the associated OFL values. And finally, we included in our report a few other recommendations, the first of which we, from the outset of this and past meetings, are always uneasy setting catch advice 3 years out. And I hate to sound like a broken record, but that, again, is due largely to the uncertainties and projections and the fact that the further forward you go, the more you're relying on assumptions about recruitment rather than actual empirical estimates of recruitment. We understand the rationale for getting those 2015 numbers on the books and therefore went ahead and gave numbers for all 3 years, but we really strongly urge that everything be done to provide new information within 2014 so that the 2015 figures can be reevaluated. A common issue in discussion of all these stocks, as well as others we've considered in the past, for example, our first discussion of whiting, was this potential for regime shifts and whether we're operating under a fundamentally different productivity regime right now that would cause us to rethink how we model stock dynamics, determine reference points, and then ultimately determine management strategies. There's evidence out there that regime shifts may be underway, but it hasn't been kind of fully synthesized, reviewed, and a conclusion reached based on that. So given that this has been a persistent issue for Georgia's Bank Cod, I think it's linked to the shifting distributions, which is also the case for Gulf of Maine Cod, but added to that this potential for a change in mortality. And then for Southern New England and Mid-Atlantic winter flounder, this change in the recruitment patterns, all of those kind of persistent or at least recent directional changes suggest we may be operating in a different environmental state. We did not conclude whether that's happening. We raised it as a hypothesis that's well worth trying to resolve, and therefore recommending some sort of regional or national process in which we would define which are the most relevant metrics to determining whether we've seen a regime shift and what threshold values of those metrics would indicate the shift, determine if those thresholds have been reached in our region, and ultimately consider how management responses need to change. And then finally, we just reiterated a previous recommendation, which is to maintain progress on the evaluation of Gulf of Maine cod stock structure and spatial dynamics. As Dr. Weinberg described, this investigation began last summer. The center, I believe, is maintaining progress on this. We went through the first phase as recommended by the SSC, and there's a second and perhaps third phase we recommended. I don't have the work plan in front of me right now, but this was not ever envisioned as being a straightforward question we'd be able to answer quickly. We were assured by our center liaison that this effort is underway and the next steps are being planned, so we welcome that news and just want to encourage that progress. And that concludes my report, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Jake. This time we're going to start at this side and work around. Just to make sure that I'm not leaning to the left or the right. Also, if I forget to mention your name, please, would you just start out with your name for all of the people who are on the web, just so that they know who's talking. Mary Beth Tooley.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Jake. And just struggling a little bit because I can't seem to find the copy of the presentation of the report. But one question that I did have relative to winter flounder, in that, you know, you had the concerns about recruitment and concerns about the projections, and so therefore, you know, recommending 75% of MSY. And what I really was hoping, excuse me, that you go back to the slide that showed that recommendation, because you're concerned about 2015. So the projection shows some, you know, nice growth in stock, and the recommendation is for a constant catch. And so I was just trying to quickly figure out what the buffer is in year one. I mean, that's where your greatest confidence is. So OFL is 2,732. Recommended ABC is 1,676. And that's just a function of doing that calculation at 75% of FMSY.
So the value of 1,676, and Tom Nies can correct me on this, but is derived from applying 75% of FMSY out into the future. So I think it's sort of where the stock will get to and a level of catch that can be maintained going forward under this, under these recruitment conditions, and then just bringing that level of catch forward to the starting year.
So in other words, you didn't use average recruitment when this was done. You used the more recent recruitment.
Yes.
And then because you applied the constant catch scenario, then technically under this, your buffer in 2014 is about 50%. And then when you get out to 15, it's greater. Is that the right interpretation?
I mean, if you take those, that constant ABC as a percentage of those OFLs. Yeah, so the idea was for an increasing buffer, because what we've seen, those OFLs are based on applying the FMSY value to the projected biomass. We have very little confidence in that projected biomass, even 3 years out. The first year out, you know, you're starting from the terminal year of the assessment. You're not making as many assumptions about recruitment and stock dynamics as you are when you get 2 and 3 years out. So what we've seen in the past is when you overlay projections from an earlier assessment on the biomass that was estimated, so our best estimate of what actually happened, there's a big gap between them. And so we're setting OFLs based on biomass estimates that we don't have a lot of confidence in. And we've tried, that's a big we. I mean, that includes center staff and the PDT. I've tried to do things to get these projections to perform better. And some improvements have been made, but there's still tremendous uncertainty. So I think this was our first effort to change the way we set ABCs to that reality, given that we haven't really figured out how to fix the projections yet.
And just one last follow-up. And it's not necessarily a question for you, I guess. I would just like to see what the control rule is in this particular situation and how this change matches up with that. And you don't need to answer that, Jake, unless if you know the answer, I suppose.
I mean, it's fairly straightforward. If I understand the question, our ABC control rule for all the ground fish stocks includes, I won't read it all, but basically it says that when scientific information allows the ABC to be set in a more sort of purposeful way that's connected to explicit understanding of uncertainty, you do it. But when we don't necessarily have that information, there's a series of defaults, one of which is fishing at 75% of FMSY. So this set of ABCs begins with that default control rule. It says we'll fish at 75% of FMSY in that first year when we have some confidence in the projection. But then we're going to take our understanding of the performance of these projections going into the future relative to the biomass estimated by the assessments, the increasing gap we tend to see there, and adjust the control rule for the second and third year. So it's sort of a hybrid of the default and a new proposal that incorporates this understanding we've been building over the last few years about the projections. Is that clear? Ish?
Okay. Laura Ramsden?
Just a quick question, and I can't find it in my documents anymore, but I did attend the SSC meeting. Am I correct in understanding that when you use the F-ramp, the M-ramp model, reflecting on point four, that you did not adjust the reference point to reflect that point four? So we're saying that double the fish are going to die, but we didn't adjust kind of our reference target in that. I believe it was maybe Pat Sullivan was saying that if we had another day, we would have done that, run that analysis and figured out whether we should use it. So am I correct in that remembering?
Yes, so the first part of that is correct, that the projections from the MRAMP model, catch was set based on the projected biomass using reference points that assume an M of 0.2. And there was some discussion about that, and we didn't come to a clear conclusion. The conclusion of the SARC, I believe, was that remember there were two models put forward. One assumes mortality has changed. The other assumes it has not. So those are two plausible scenarios. Now, in the scenario where it's changed, there's two options. One is that it will stay there, and the other is that it will return to that longer-term value. The SARC, I believe, their conclusion was that it's likely that it will return. It wasn't a strong conclusion, but, again, given the inherent life history traits of cod that seem to be more consistent with a value of 0.2, given some of the concerns about the biases that tag-based estimates of M have, and given that the exact mechanisms weren't clear, I think the SARC concluded that while there was sufficient rationale to consider that mortality has increased in recent years, it's far from certain that it's going to be maintained at that level. And therefore, that using reference points, that modeling the stock based on recent conditions, i.e. M.4 was appropriate, but that reference point should be based on longer-term conditions that the SARC was expecting.
And I appreciate that would be a consideration, but as I'm told often, there's nothing we can do about the seals that are growing at a 7 to 13% rate. So in considering they eat 5 tons of food a year, I'm not sure that M is going to go back to 0.2 since, as our regional director said, we can't change the Marine Mammal Act. And we have herring at carrying capacity, which I believe was also mentioned at the SSC meeting that pelagic fish have been documented as eating the cod roe. So, you know, there are some concerns that it would stay at 0.4. And so as a groundfish committee member, I think you've probably been notified that we have asked for what that number would be. So, again, just trying to be consistent. If we are saying that it has ramped to M4 based on a variety of things, including, I know the predation is my key thing, but ocean acidification, climate change, all of those things happening, that perhaps we should at least be able to see what that model would generate so that we're consistent, that we're using M4 and we're using a reference point for 0.4. So I guess my theme today is consistency, and we would love to see that number if possible. Thank you.
Make a comment. I don't think it's my place or the SSC's place to determine work that should be done by the PDT. So I just wanted to point out, though, that I think consistent with what you're saying, and I know, as Mary Beth said, you guys only got the report late last night or may not even have it yet, but in our report, we do note the fact that there was some discussion and perhaps some disagreement. It's unclear how much because we didn't resolve the question about what is the appropriate way to, you know, what is the appropriate reference point to use when you assume that M has increased. There were cases made either way. So I think we agree that that was an unresolved issue. Ultimately, though, the SSC often walks a fine line between feeling unconstrained with our scientific judgment and respecting the outcomes of the SAWSARC process. And so while we did note that as something that deserves further attention. I think we were respecting the decisions that were made and moving forward with those. But it's something we do struggle with, the extent to which we're sort of bound by the outcomes of the assessment versus free to use our own scientific judgment on points where we disagree. On this one, however, there was no consensus one way or another, and we weren't going to get there in the time at hand. So this seemed to be the most appropriate advice.
Peter Kendall.
Yes, thank you, Jake. Can you touch a little bit more on, it seems like there's a shift now for the SSC to go to a constant catch. And, I mean, we passed it yesterday with the herring, and it seemed like the industry was okay with a constant catch when the levels were at a pretty high level, because that benefits everything. But it seems like, and there was built-in buffers with that. But it seems like when you just went through your presentation with Southern New England flounder here, things look positive. Yet in the third year out, you don't want a constant catch. But yet when we go to the Gulf of Maine cod and Georgia's Bank cod, where the industry feels that the numbers are quite off, that you would rather stick with a relatively real low constant catch for 3 years. Can you explain that?
Well, I think the difference between the herring and groundfish constant catch advice, and I'm stretching my memory on herring, it was a whole 2 months ago, but I believe that was a request from the council or the committee to consider constant catch scenarios for reasons that had to do with management efficiencies and simplicities and business planning and then things like that. Those issues were not discussed by the SSC and as Tom Neese told me when I asked him, not by the PDT either. So this was a similar strategy recommended for very different reasons. Our reason for recommending this is purely scientific. We did not discuss or consider whether there would be advantages or disadvantages for managers, whether there would be advantages or disadvantages for fishermen in terms of planning business, or any of those issues. What we focused on, again, was this repeated poor performance of projections and our inability to really fix that in a satisfactory way, and therefore our need to now do something else in terms of setting ABCs. So constant catch is really just a way of increasing the buffer the further into the future we're going and therefore the less confident we are in what we think is going to be happening in the water.
Doug Grout. Terry Alexander.
Yeah, thank you, Jake. I had a comment and then a couple of questions. Sitting through the SSC meeting, it kind of struck me that a few of the people around the table were saying, even if we didn't fish on this dock, the Gulf of Maine cod or Georgia's Bank cod, we don't know if they'd ever rebuild. I mean, that's kind of unnerving to a person who has to sit around this table and vote on you know, our strategy here. And you had touched on, which I think the discussion is going to come in later, the regime shift. Can you just kind of tell us a little bit more about what they were saying about the regime shift, even if it wasn't a...
Sure. Well, again, there were issues within all three of these assessments. They were slightly different, but they all had a common theme of, you know, we know all of the different demographic traits that go into an assessment, growth, mortality, fecundity, maturity, recruitment, all vary through time. And when we model them, you know, we capture some of that variability or we just assume sort of a long-term average. The question about whether we're seeing a regime shift, I think, comes from two different directions. One is looking at those attributes and seeing evidence that rather than just kind of random variable stochastic noise around their long-term average, we're actually seeing a continued directional change. And so, again, the potential for this persistent change in mortality of Gulf of Maine cod and maybe Georgia's Bank cod, and this recruitment, this pattern in the recruitment residuals for Southern New England lunar flounder. The other line of evidence that we touched upon, and Dr. Weinberg referred to this but didn't delve into, is a series of studies that have been done looking at different aspects of the Gulf of Maine ecosystem that have to do with freshwater inflow through rivers and rainfall, patterns in plankton distribution, certainly patterns in temperature, salinity, et cetera. As Dr. Weinberg correctly pointed out, we're not yet able to link any of those sort of environmental measures that we are seeing persistent and maintained changes in with any of those attributes of these stocks that we're considering. So we're not really yet able to say whether something like these persistent changes in rainfall are linked to the recruitment residuals in Southern New England lunar flounder. We haven't made that link yet. But because you have two lines of evidence, one coming from the biology of the stocks and others coming from the wider environment, it suggests perhaps that the one is driving the other. And we should look into that and figure that out.
Mark Gibson. Right. Terry. Sorry, John.
I have a comment on Terry's what Terry said, and then a question for Jake. When Terry said reacted to someone saying we might stop fishing and the stocks might not rebuild, I mean, we don't have to look very far to a situation where that happened in Canada, right? So when you look at levels that were being discussed here, 1,249 or 1,550, those are numbers that are pretty close to zero, right? And we've been talking about regime shift and we've been talking about environmental factors. And so it would seem to me that we have to acknowledge the possibility that that these stocks are so low and the stocks have so fundamentally shifted in terms of relative balance between predators and prey and other environmental factors, that there certainly is the chance that we might get to a condition where you could stop all fishing and they would not rebuild. Look at the levels of recruitment that are persistently low, and look at the history in Canada where all fishing stopped and stocks did not rebuild. I mean, we have to recognize that that is at least a possibility. That is what we're facing. This is a serious situation. And all of us have talked about how we're with regime shift, with environmental factors, that we're not aware of all the forces that are at work out there now, and we need to learn a lot more about that. But certainly the possibility exists that may be in the cards, that we may make all of these difficult decisions that are in front of us, and it may not be enough. That is, I hope it's not the case. I hope it's not the case, but that is certainly a possibility. The question I have, Jake, is you mentioned, if I remember correctly, that in the difference between 1249 and 1550, if I have those numbers correct, both representing substantial cuts from previous levels, that that the SSC preferred the 1249 because under both models, let me phrase it the other way. In the 1550 number under one of the models, the risk of overfishing was more than 50%, I think. But you, the SSC, was willing to put both those numbers forward because there was a feeling of unease. You preferred the 1249. The numbers are close. They both represent a substantial cut. The 1550 did seem to have a slightly higher chance of overfishing. Am I capturing the view of the SSC correctly?
I think you've got it about right. If you look at the table that's in the PDT report, it shows that for either actually of those ABC alternatives, under the MRAMP model, we'd be in some years at least, I think in the first 2 years, if not the third, exceeding FMSY, so technically overfishing by that reference point. However, under the base case model, we're not in all years for either level of catch. This gets back to the difficulties. The added insights we get from considering two models come with difficulties about, well, what if one tells you something and very different from another in terms of whether we're overfishing or not. I guess where we got to is as you described, that both under one model are fairly safe levels of catch, but more marginally risky, but not excessively so under the other. And that, again, as you articulated, they both represent a substantial reduction in F, and that if we are stuck in some really low level that the stock can't climb out of, drastically reducing F will give us the best chance to see that response that we've had in a long time. So I think that's about what you said.
Thanks, Jake.
Terry Stockwell.
Yeah, thanks, Jake. I was unable to be at last week's SSC meeting, but I did read your report. And under the Gulf of Maine Cod section, there is a statement that says that the SSC has serious concerns about the status of the stock, which motivate the preference for the ABC of the 1249. Given the tough decisions we have to make this afternoon, could you please elaborate a little bit more on the serious concerns?
Sure. Well, I mean, I think Dr. Weinberg outlined those fairly well. That the biomass is at quite a low percentage of not just the biomass target, but the biomass threshold. We're not seeing promising signs of recruitment. The actual catch has been fairly consistently below the catch limits, and there's a variety of reasons that can be the case. It doesn't simply mean that there's fewer fish out there than we think, although that is one possibility. It could be due to a number of factors, including shifting distributions of the fish that make them harder to find, or other factors that just constrain the ability of the stock to get that quota. But nevertheless, because one possibility is that we're actually overestimating how many fish are out there, despite the discouraging signs that the assessment is giving us. And the fact that we've seen slow, but some slow recovery, but it hasn't been maintained and it hasn't been anywhere near as rapid as what we're hoping for. And again, some of the other metrics I indicated earlier having to do with truncation of the age structure and other things. There's just a variety of indicators in addition that fed into the assessment in addition to the outcomes of the assessment that are suggesting the stock is in bad shape.
Dave Gaisel.
Hi, Jake. I'd like to try and walk through some of the calculations that were made here to help not only the council but also the audience. We got an enormous amount of people here and an enormous amount more listening in, and quite frankly, we talk in tongues here. most of the time, you know, with all these acronyms. So one of the goals of trying to set these numbers is to try and develop direct estimates of the fishing rate at MSY. What could be the maximum fishing rate? Now, the SSC was not able to do that, correct?
I'm not sure I understand the question, Dave. Not able to...
We didn't establish an FMSY. We set a proxy.
Oh, okay, so you're saying estimated directly using stock recruitment parameters, and that's...
Right.
Yes.
And
for the two cod stocks.
So we've set a proxy, and then we had a pretty lengthy discussion on that proxy, as I remember. Maybe you could walk people through that so they could understand how it is that it's been settled on F of 40% of maximum spawning potential.
Well, I actually wouldn't say we had a lengthy discussion about at this meeting about the proxies. We've certainly discussed that in the past, and there is certainly a diversity of opinions around the table on that. We discussed whether different reference points and perhaps different proxies need to be used if in the MRAMP model, if you're assuming something fundamentally different about mortality, if you need to factor that level of that mortality estimate into estimation of your reference points. But I don't think at this meeting, though, we had extensive discussion about the merits of proxy estimates versus direct estimates, although that's certainly something we batted around in the past.
No, it seemed to me it got batted around, and I never saw that it really got resolved. In your report on page 4, you cite some of the national standard guidelines, and specifically the phrase, some short-term environmental changes can alter the current size of a stock or stock complex without affecting long-term productivity capacity of the stock or stock complex. Therefore, depending on the interpretation of the terms prevailing in short-term, it may not be necessary to apply different F values to biomass projected from the two models in determining catch advice. Could you explain that to people in something approaching English?
I'll do my best. Right, so the discussion there was, you know, we to the extent we're comfortable, try to follow the national standard guidelines. And there's a series of language that relates to this, series of language within the guidelines that relate to this general issue of changing environmental conditions. And so these were just two bits of text we plucked out that, again, depending upon your interpretation, can be seen to be in contradiction to one another. So it all relates back to this question of whether we need to, and again, this is only relevant to the MRAMP model. The base case model doesn't assume any change, and therefore moving forward with F values based on 0.2 is pretty straightforward. So these aren't relevant issues if you believe that's the more accurate model. However, given that we have two that really with no preference indicated for one or the other, for that second one, this question of whether we should be using different F values based on different reference points, to try to answer that question, we went back to the national standard guidelines. So I think that first quote we took to suggest that we should be changing them. That again, if your interpretation of the term prevailing environmental conditions is sort of right now, what we're seeing this year and perhaps over a short period of, I don't know, 2 to 5 or 10 years, that if you have seen a change in mortality or some other attribute, you need to carry that through to your reference points and adjust them. However, that second bit of text, again, depending upon your interpretation, suggests that perhaps short-term changes are not something you should make big changes in reference points to, and you should actually be looking over a longer-term period, which, again, this is open to interpretation, but you might take to mean a matter of decades, that looking at what the stock is doing through time in a sort of averaged way that lets you see pattern above the environmental noise. So the point here was that this is an unresolved issue. Again, it's one we weren't asked to resolve and therefore and didn't have time and therefore didn't.
but we wanted to highlight that it is a concern. It is an issue, and depending upon both your interpretation of the national standard guidelines, but also your opinion on what's going on out in the water, could lead you to two very different conclusions.
Thank you very much. I mean, that is actually a very clear description of the issue we face, and will be the subject of several motions from the Groundfish Committee this afternoon, because there are a number of us. I don't know if there's a majority of the council, but there are a number of us who believe that natural mortality has changed due to environmental conditions and therefore requires some further examination before we can set these catch limits. So I'll let it go for right now, but I do thank you for a very clear, concise definition of something that the committee batted around for the better part of 2 hours and had a real difficult time with.
Mark, Dave Preble. Dr. Pierce.
Okay, thanks a lot, Jake. You covered a lot of ground on behalf of the SSC, and that's tough to do in an objective way considering the nature of the questions, but you've done a real good job. I just got a couple of questions, and some relate to clarifications because I'm still not completely sure of what the SSC concluded on a couple of things. I was very glad to see the recommendations from the SSC relative to the regime shift, whether we've had a regime shift or not. And frankly, from what I've heard out of the Northeast Fishery Science Center, from published papers from center scientists, I thought the regime shift was a definite thing, but that doesn't seem to be the case. So I'm still a bit uncertain as to how to advise other people and what to say to fishermen when we talk about regime shifts, because yes, no, it's sounds like we don't know. Although, again, I thought the center was more conclusive with regarding that, but I may be wrong. But from reading your summary of the SSC discussions, it comes across to me that the SSC has concluded that it's more likely than not that we have had some sort of a regime shift that may be not in perpetuity, but could be long-term. Am I correct with that understanding, or am I reading more into what the SSC concluded from based upon what's written in this report?
I'm going to say you're reading a little more into it. We certainly discussed, again, as I tried to articulate in response to Terry Alexander's question, the different lines of evidence that are suggesting not just variability but persistent change. And the fact that that made it worthwhile to dig deeper into this. But I would not say we reached any firm conclusion. So I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, my personal view is that it's more likely than not that we have had one. But, again, personal perspective based upon what I read, what I researched. I'm glad that that you, in your summary of the SSC discussions, were very faithful, for the most part, faithful in continuously referencing the fact that we don't use FMSY values. We use the proxies, the FMSY proxies, which for some stocks, many stocks actually, are likely very less than the actual FMSY values, and that's based on previous SSC work, a review of a report done by the Massachusetts and Marine Fisheries Institute. So I'm glad you were consistent with that, because it helps frame my thinking about something we're going to discuss later on that came out of the Groundfish Committee. All right. Now, I'm not going to repeat what was said, but just an emphasis, I want to emphasize something that I believe you said, because it's important. The report says that the SSC is urging, the word is used, urge, use of 1249 metric tons for Gulf of Maine cod, that there are serious concerns, understandably so, about the status of the resource, and those serious concerns lead you to, again, urge the 1249. But you still offer up the somewhat higher number of 1550 for specific reasons that you outline. And I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you said that the difference between the two, the 1249 and the 1550, the difference is of an amount that is not exceedingly risky. Those are the words you used in your response to, and it might have been John Bullitt, not exceedingly risky, which to my way of thinking is a correct way of assessing the difference between the two. And there's a little bit more risk. It's a higher number, but not excessively risky in terms of dealing with the status of the stock. So you're not saying, my question is, the SSC did not say go with 1249. You did offer up as an alternative that we can consider the 1550 because of the fact that the difference is small enough so it's not excessively risky.
I think the simplest way to answer that question is we wouldn't have put the 1550 value on the table if we weren't comfortable with it, if we didn't feel that it met the legal and policy requirements we're striving to meet and didn't adequately account for uncertainty. However, again, the 1249 figure, given the gravity of our concerns about the stock and given the need to really try to pull out of this rut, would give it a better chance of maybe turning a corner that doesn't seem to be turning. But that the difference between the two was within our comfort zone.
Okay,
sounding a little vague there.
No, that wasn't vague. That was a good response. I appreciate that. It clarifies it, and it's completely consistent. Your response is completely consistent with what's said in the summary of the SSC meeting, where the SSC acknowledges the significant economic impacts that both numbers, both amounts, would have on the industry. The SSC makes note of the fact that both of those numbers, put it that way, both of those potential quotas, or ABCs, that is, appropriately use the assessment outcomes and both appropriately account for scientific uncertainty. So you've helped me get a better understanding of the degree of comfort that the SSC has with both numbers and the reason why the SSC is suggesting that the lower number would provide an even greater degree of comfort. So thank you.
John.
Not to beat a dead horse, but I just want to add my voice to the choir of concern about this regime change. In my world, that's more of a political term rather than a biological or statistical term. But with each passing meeting that I come to, it seems like we may, in fact, be looking at the wrong stuff, that we're measuring OFLs and ABCs and MSYs, when, in fact, it may be predation and water temperature and freshwater impacts, as you implied. I know at the end of your slides you said that I think the recommendation was we should try and create a national metric or national metrics on that. And I just I know we have limited resources, limited stuff, but as I said, with each passing day, I think from a layperson's perspective, that's more the cause than some of these other things that we're looking at, the overfishing and whatnot. I'm glad you pointed out that in the national standards, there is this flexibility to take this into account, whether it's in the short term or long term. But I hope our scientists and researchers and authors maybe take some more time looking at this regime change. Thank you.
Thank you, Jake. You're not off the hook quite yet. Like we did before, I just wanted to go through. I plan to take some questions from the public. I, again, ask people to make them questions. This is not the time for comments on the decisions we're going to make this afternoon. There will be a time for public comment before we get into those. And knowing the questions that were asked by the council, I would ask people to try not to be to duplicate those questions. If there is time, I know we have some representatives of elected officials here. I will give them an opportunity if they wanted to read or have something go into the public record before we break for lunch, or if they want to do it just before we make the groundfish decisions, that's fine as well. I'll give them that choice. So I will go. If there are questions for Jake concerning the science or the SSC report, anybody in the audience? Okay. Seeing no hands, I'm going to go there. My understanding is that we have Sarah Holmes from Senator Shaheen's office. Would you like to make a statement now or later?
Jake's asking.
You're done. Thank you, Jake. Jim Quigley from Congressman Keating's office. And I hope I'm doing these in the proper order. If I'm not, it is my fault.
Sorry. Not used to this. As a way of introduction, my name is Jim Quigley. I'm Congressman Bill Keating's Deputy District Director. I work out of the New Bedford District Office. The Congressman is in his second term. You know, in his first term as a member of the 112th Congress, he represented the 10th District, and now with redistricting, he has the privilege of representing the people of the 9th District of Massachusetts, which includes the South Shore, Cape Cod and the islands, Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard, the South Coast, which is parts of Plymouth County, as well as Bristol County, New Bedford and Fall River as part of that. It's quite an opportunity to work in an office and work for a boss that represents such a tight-knit coastal community. And we look forward to working to solve shared challenges that our district faces. As you know, last week, my boss, Congressman Keating, joined Reps Markey, Taney, Lynch, Senator, Secretary of State, John Kerry, and Senator Warren, and sent in a letter to Regional Administrator John Bullitt. The letter was sent in response to Mr. Bullitt's response to Captain Howard's request that NOAA Fisheries extend the interim measures in place for the 2012 fishing year. Now, at this point, I'd just like to thank New Bedford Mayor John Mitchell for his support of the Mass delegation's effort within that letter, as well as thank Mr. Bullitt and Dr. Karp for their transparency and communication thus far and their open dialogue that they've maintained since day one and throughout this entire process. The letter's priorities included to implement interim measures to help protect Massachusetts fishermen from the effects of drastic cuts to harvest quotas for cod and haddock in the Gulf of Maine. Explore options to assist fishermen and communities for the 2013 fishing year and beyond, including to reconsider the decision to reject the New England Fishery Management Council's request to implement an interim measure for Gulf of Maine cod and haddock and to reduce overfishing in 2013. It is the Mass delegation's belief that the Council recommended measures would prevent the collapse of the Gulf of Maine fisheries and insist on the rehabilitation of fish stocks. It is our office's distinct fear that with these drastic cuts, many of our fishermen, many of our constituents will not have the ability to fish. And it is also our distinct fear that once they leave the fishery, that they will not return. What will be of our waterfronts on the South Shore, the Cape, and New Bedford if our fishermen are not there? Who will catch and process those stocks when they someday rebuild? The interim measure for Gulf of Maine Cod and Haddock would have provided a crucial bridge while we work to improve the science and the management. We'd also like to see a creation of a detailed plan to mitigate the adverse economic impacts of the decision. This was reiterated by Mayor Mitchell yesterday in his letter and suggested during Tuesday's meeting. Consideration of carryover the maximum possible amount of unused quota for the 2012 season, greater retention, and reopening negotiations with Canada on transboundary stocks of haddock and yellowtail flounder, we hope will be considered. As you know, my boss, Congressman Keating, as well as other members of the Mass delegation, have been working diligently in pursuit of the financial disaster assistance for the New England ground fishery industry. In September 2012, the Department of Commerce issued a disaster declaration for New England ground fishery. States from Maine to New York, as well as salmon fishery in Alaska, and for those impacted by flooding in Mississippi. Senator John Kerry included $150 million in funding specifically for fishery disaster declaration in the original Senate-passed version of the disaster assistance package for Hurricane Sandy at the end of the past Congress, the 112th Congress. Just a couple of weeks ago, Reps Keating, Taney, and Markey each introduced separate amendments to the House version of the bill to increase funding for states that received fishing disaster declaration in 2012. Unfortunately, neither of these amendments was accepted by the House majority, and the bill was passed by the House with only $5 million of assistance going to New York and New Jersey to assist in hurricane-related damages. On Monday, the Senate passed the House version and is now sent to the President's desk for signature. Without fisheries disaster funding for any of the states apart from New York and New Jersey. Future opportunities for appropriating funding for fishing disaster assistance include the extension of the 2008 Farm Bill or a regular appropriations bill by the Department of Commerce. My boss, Rep. Keating, will continue to work with the Mass delegation and the fishery leaders in Congress to appropriate this money. If you could just indulge me, I'd like to just hit on two separate issues as well. There's a real concern within my office and from my boss with these potential cost of observer coverage. NOAA observed the at-sea monitoring costs for the FY12, but has said that fishermen will now be responsible for 50% in the 2013 fishing year. Requiring fishermen to cover at-sea monitoring costs is a direct out-of-pocket expense that the industry cannot afford at this time. These are numerous fishermen on the brink of bankruptcy who may be forced out of business. Furthermore, it may reduce the profitability of other fishermen at a time when they are already facing severe economic challenges. We feel that this management decision would just compound an already complex set of circumstances. We would like the council and NOAA to take a look at what additional resources are necessary for NOAA to continue to defray these costs. What can be done to help our fishermen? A motion was adopted by the council in its November meeting and is now part of the current draft of Framework 48. The measure that Mr. Stockwell moved on behalf of the committee to include Framework 48, the PDT's Option X for observer coverage for fiscal year 2013. At-sea monitoring for coverage of sector trips at the level of NMFS can fund during FY 2013. The motion carried with a show of hands. The last point I just want to hit on is stock assessments. Our office is looking forward to the workshop with NOAA and the Massachusetts Fishery Institute and SMATS, and is very pleased that the New England Science Center will be reviewing the stock assessment process. My boss, Rep. Keating, has long supported an end-to-end review of stock assessments and believes it is vital to work with the industry and to get to the bottom of are our current assessments working and how to better improve what we're doing. We encourage NOAA to include the expansion of collaborative research involving commercial fishermen and their vessels. Our office is available to assist both the agency's regulators and industry stakeholders in facilitating this process moving forward. On behalf of my boss, I thank you for your time and hope you consider some of the points I spoke about today. Thank you.
Thank you. Did Sarah Holmes come back?
Thank you. I'm Sarah Holmes from Senator Shaheen's office, and thank you for allowing me to read this brief statement on behalf of the senator. Senator Shaheen is very concerned about the effects the National Marine Fisheries Service's management decisions are having on fishermen in coastal communities in New Hampshire and across New England. She is pushing NIMS to extend emergency measures to protect the commercial fishing industry in New Hampshire. She is a strong supporter of this historic industry and is very concerned about the effect its collapse would have on our coastal economies and the economy of the region as a whole. She is disappointed that Congress so far has failed to provide disaster relief funding for the Northeast ground fishery. She will continue to fight for this funding in the Senate. Thanks.
Thank you. Is Glenn Normando from Governor Hassan's office here?
Got that right, I guess. For the record, my name is Glenn Normando. I serve as the executive director of the New Hampshire Fish and Game Department. And my boss, Governor Hassan, has asked me to read something into the record. For the sake of full disclosure, I owned a dragger in the 80s that I fished out of Portsmouth. And I personally have a significant amount of empathy for the situation here. And I think it's indefensible that Congress is not taking care of our situation with our fishermen. But as you know, the National Marine Fisheries Service recently declined to grant the New England Fishery Management Council's request for interim measures to reduce overfishing of the Gulf of Maine, cod, and haddock for the 2013 fishing year. While I am mindful of the need for effective policies that protect our fisheries and preserve our natural fish stocks all along the Atlantic coast, I am concerned with the negative economic impacts that the proposed restrictions will have on our local fishing industry here in New Hampshire. Fishing is a time-honored trade in New Hampshire, with small boat fishermen relying on cod and haddock in particular to support their livelihoods. Given the great challenges our commercial fishing fleets continually face, the restrictive nature of the 2013 annual catch limits enacted by the National Marine Fisheries Service will have a dire effect on the economic viability of New Hampshire's fishermen, placing one of our state's oldest and most treasured industries at grave risk. Efforts that seek to maintain sustainable fish supplies and protect our marine life should be embraced by all those who revere our oceans as the vast natural resources that they are. It has been my experience that no group appreciates this more than our fishermen, who have worked in recognition of this notion for generations. As you meet today, I urge you to consider both the environmental and economic consequences of our fisheries policies and seek to achieve an appropriate balance. Thank you for your consideration of this matter, and please don't hesitate to contact me if I can be of assistance moving forward as we work to maintain this important balance. Sincerely, Margaret Woodhassen, Governor of the State of New Hampshire.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a representative from Mitchell, Mayor Mitchell's office that wanted to put some? Have I missed anybody else? Okay, well, thank you all. I think we will, at this point, we will break. Oops, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, John. I jumped the gun.
I wanted to, Jim Quigley, in his comments, referred to a letter from his boss, Congressman Keating, and other members of the Massachusetts delegation addressed to me. And so I wanted to respond to it, even though Jim has left the building. Senator Shaheen's representative also made some similar points. Jim, you're there. Okay. I wanted to respond to your letter and your comments. And thank you very much for them. Your letter, which we haven't written a reply yet, but we will. We take it very seriously. Had three essential components as I read it. One was a request that we reconsider our decision not to grant a second interim year. And we gave that request from the council here very serious consideration. And I really don't see any wiggle room. I'm not the lawyer, but I don't see any wiggle room in that from a legal standpoint. And as I said to the council Groundfish Committee when I met with them on Friday, even if there were wiggle room in the law, we've just spent 3 hours, seeing that there's not really any wiggle room in the biology to do this. So I appreciate the request from the members of the New England delegation asking for a second year of interim measures, but I don't think we're going to revisit that decision for both legal reasons and for reasons of biology. The day of reckoning is here for legal reasons and for reasons of biology. A year ago, when we went to the extraordinary measures of granting the interim measure and setting a higher quota, we all were very hopeful that the stock assessment was wrong, that we would find more fish, that the fleet would find more fish, that the stock assessment that the Science Center would do would find more fish, and all of that proved to be wrong. The fleet didn't find any more fish, and neither did the stock assessment. And so now we've listened to the science, and now we have the decisions before us. So on the first point of the letter, I think that we're going to stick with our decision. On the second point of the letter, Jim, Congressman Keating and the other members of the delegation talked about, and so did Senator Shaheen's representative, talked about the extraordinary lengths that the members of the New England delegation have gone to secure economic assistance for New England fishermen. My boss, Commerce Secretary Blank, declared a fishery resource disaster, and that made it possible for Congress to seek funding. And Congress has done that. and they've done Plan A and Plan B and Plan C and Plan D, and so far it's been unsuccessful. And I commend the members of the delegation for not giving up, because that economic assistance is necessary. And I know they're not going to give up. And, you know, that after Plan A and Plan B and Plan C and Plan D, they're going to go with Plan E and F and G until they're successful. And I congratulate the delegation on their persistence. And I hope that we are a compassionate society that helps people in all regions of the country deal with disasters when they occur. And so I am, you know, just as a citizen, I'm grateful for the hard work and persistence of the delegation in seeking economic assistance that's needed, and I hope that their efforts prove successful and that their persistence is rewarded. Thirdly, the delegation letter laid out a number of items that can be done to mitigate losses that will come as a result of their of the very low levels of stock and that the actions we have to take to try and rebuild these stock, carryover and other things, many of which that we're already working on. And that's going to take work together. The council, the regional office, and the industry, and Congress, and so we are exploring many of those already. We appreciate those suggestions, and we'll be more successful if we work on those together. So again, thank you for the letter and the role that that the delegation is playing on that. And I just wanted, for the record, to respond to your comments, Jim, Sarah, to yours on behalf of Senator Shaheen, and Glenn, to yours on behalf of the governor. Thank you.
Thank you, John. It's 12 o'clock. We will break for lunch. Please be back at 1:15, and we will continue on.